All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, April 18th. Happy Tax Day. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started, keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. You can head over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system that's powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. That'll give you optimal lineups for NBA all through the playoffs, and it also includes our MLB projections as well. So all of our projections and optimal lineups wrapped into one membership blanket. You're all good to go, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and I think you'll be happy with the service. So, buddy, three games today for NBA, and they happen to be three of the games that we didn't talk so much about, I don't think, in our Friday podcast, so there won't be, hopefully won't be too much overlap. That's the one problem with the NBA playoffs, is you just get a, with seven-game series, you just get a lot of, hey, remember what I said yesterday? That's kind of all still true today, like not much changed. Which I noticed when you did the article, you just copy and pasted my article, which I appreciated, so I guess that was...
That's not exactly true at all.
I saw most of the things that were there.
I put your stuff in there, and it was not even close to most, just so you know. It was one paragraph, in italicized for the reader's benefit, and then 50 to 75% more than you wrote about the original series I wrote after game one, so... You're welcome to the readers out there, and F you to you, buddy.
So, the first game is the Bucks and the Raptors. Bucks, I was going to say they stole a win here in Toronto, but they didn't really steal it. They kind of just blew them out. This is one thing we either talked about this off air or at some point, but we talked that the Bucks might present some matchup issues for Toronto here, especially with their length, and also if they were willing to play Giannis and Middleton just huge minutes, and that's exactly what happened. Giannis played 38 minutes, Middleton played 41. And they cause real issues for the Raptors here. Give me some of your thoughts on what we can expect here for game two. Do you think the Raptors change any of their philosophy after this game, or they still stay the course with some of the rotations, which, I mean, the rotations ended up sort of being what we thought. I think we kind of nailed the minutes for most of these teams going into the first game, which I was kind of proud of, because it can be tough when these teams shorten up their rotations to just say, all right, well, we're only going to be playing, you know, 7 to 8 guys now as opposed to the end of the regular season. Give me some of your thoughts, your initial thoughts on this game two between the Bucks and the Raptors.
Sure. So yeah, I think there's a lot going on here actually, because there were more questions. I mean, there's a lot of questions throughout the playoffs right now simply because of all the injury concerns. But there were a lot of questions going into this game, just more of on a matchup and X's and O's basis. So the first one that you pointed to was just what exactly was the Raptors' plan with Giannis? They do have some bodies there. They've got Tucker, they've got Carroll. Though Carroll hasn't quite looked right after coming back from injury. DeRozan's not really in play because they rely on him so heavily on the offense, and he's probably just not tall enough. So we knew that they were going to have some problems dealing with Giannis, but what actually became a bigger problem for them was Greg Monroe. It looked like, like Zach Lowe and other places were pointing out that Toronto might have a mismatch here with Jonas Valanciunas against Thon Maker and whoever else was going to try to cover the center position. But Greg Monroe just went out there and in 26 minutes just beat them down. 14 and 15. And like that showed that the mismatch was perhaps on the other side of the ball. And I don't really get the Bucks. I don't know why Thon Maker is still starting for them, like why the jig isn't up there when Greg Monroe to me is just clearly the better player right now. I get that, Maker presents a different presence down low in terms of rim protection, but if the guy can't stay on the court for 20 minutes a game, I just don't know what the point is, I guess. A lot happened here. I was certainly surprised by the result. I didn't expect Milwaukee to beat them by 14 points, but a combination of them maybe catching them off guard with the Greg Monroe thing and Toronto having a terrible shooting day, 36% and 22% from three, kind of gets the job done.
They just weren't able to really, Monroe clearly was a mismatch problem, especially on the glass where he was getting like a rebound every 45 seconds or something like that. But there was that issue. And then with Giannis, they just simply couldn't stop him from getting to the basket. Like he was in mismatches the entire game. And it really pointed to, it didn't really kind of matter who they threw. They can't, like, Ibaka's too slow to guard him. They tried that for a little bit. That didn't work. Carroll and guys like Tucker are just too small. And so I think this is going to continue to be an issue. And if Giannis can still kind of just continued the game plan of what he was doing last game, which was get into the post and get to the basket. I just don't. I mean, look, Toronto's going to win games here, so like they're still a very good team. But this is sort of what we thought might be an issue, was that length. And Giannis specifically is such a tough matchup unless you have exactly the right personnel. And it might just be that Toronto just doesn't have it.
They don't happen to be one of those teams that has someone. Yeah, like it's interesting with him too, because you see the assists go way down, and he and Middleton kind of switch roles a little bit, where Middleton was pretty cold from the field, but wound up setting up Giannis a lot here. Yeah, it's tough. They just don't quite have guys that can cover both of them, so they kind of have to make a decision, and that seems to clearly favor the Bucks right now.
Yeah, Middleton did your good point about him running bad from the field. Like, so that's actually another concern probably for the Raptors, is that they got blown out and Middleton didn't even shoot that well, considering he took the second most shots on the team. I really like the Bucks. I was texting you the other day that this is a team that I'm just really rooting for this team to win. I don't know why. I really want them to win. I like watching them play. Brogdon did see minutes, so I think we can expect that again. He still makes a pretty nice value on the cheaper end of the point guard train here. Monroe, if I think you're going to see the same amount of minutes out of Monroe. Actually, I ticked him up in minutes because I think, if anything, you see more from him that they maybe realized too late in the game that they maybe should have brought him in earlier. I could imagine a scenario where you get 27 to 28 minutes out of him in this game. You saw some bench minutes. I wouldn't really count on those. That was because the game was over with a couple of minutes left to go in the game. Raptor side, Lowry really struggled. He only played 34 minutes. Really couldn't get anything going from the field. Over 6 from 3. You're probably not going to see that thing again. He struggled at the beginning of the playoffs last season too, although I think that was more injury related. How worried are you after this game one performance out of Lowry?
Well, when we go into the playoffs, I really try to look more closely at individual games than we would during the regular season. And that's because the whole regular season for a lot of these teams is basically just warm-ups for the playoffs. Like Toronto knew they were going to make the playoffs all season, so, and they still led the East. And I think, yeah, this is something I had the tip of my tongue last time, but I think they still led the East in terms of point differential. So they're a good team, and they've really never had anything to worry about. So they come in, they're trying to keep everyone healthy. So their plan going into this game was definitely piquing my interest. I don't think, however, that Lowry shooting just 11 times was really the plan. I think that was more of him just getting shaken up, just for whatever reason. Brogdon, better defender than Dellavedova. And while Lowry, a lot of people saw him as having a particularly big advantage going into this game, it wasn't really playing out that way. And, you can kind of get cold, kind of get shook, and then lose your coach's confidence as well. And they have a reasonable backup in Corey Joseph. I would expect for this game, if it stays close, for Lowry to be out there for more like 36 to 38 minutes. I would not be thrilled to play him in daily fantasy probably, but I wouldn't avoid it either, I guess. I think I'd need to see one more game of him being bad before I really start worrying about it.
Well, the reason you don't really need to play him is because there just is better point guard value, just higher up in the price tier, which we'll get to in a little bit with some other guys. He's fine as a tournament play, especially if he were to get hot. Like I said, the Bucks were able to close out him around the arc, which stopped him from getting any really good looks from three, and also from driving. Like he really just couldn't do anything in the game. I think this is clearly going to be, I'd be shocked if this wasn't his absolute worst game of the playoffs. Like, he's just too good to have four points and six assists. Like, he's, almost an all-NBA point guard. So, if anything, you're going to see, you'll definitely see him, he'll not be this bad again. Now, the question is, how good can he be? I'm not totally positive. Ibaka was really good, 19 and 14. I think you probably see a few more minutes out of him. He was just kind of solid. The Bucks had trouble actually guarding him because they really don't have, like, a reasonable comp for what he brings to the table. And DeRozan just did his kind of thing, 21 shots. Actually jacked up 2 3-pointers, which he never does, which you could tell they were losing because the guy just never wants to shoot a 3-pointer, and still got to the line 14 times. So it really wasn't a DeRozan or a Ibaka issue. It was kind of just these auxiliary pieces really couldn't get much going. Specifically Lowry, he was the main issue. They got blown out. Like, when you're arguably best player doesn't do anything on offense, then you're going to have an almost impossible time to win. So good value out of Giannis, good value still out of Monroe. I think we see Ibaka and DeRozan maybe show up in lineups, and then I think maybe play a wait-and-see approach on Lowry.
Yeah, I think you can look into DeRozan. We'll backpedal for 1 second on DeRozan, because I think some people will look at this and kind of be concerned, the 7 for 21 from the field, less than an overwhelming performance. It's a little bit tough with him because a lot of DeRozan's game is just getting into the lane and getting fouled. And particularly when they need buckets, that's oftentimes just the plan. So as they start, the game starts to slip away. You saw them going to that more and more, your DeRozan ISO plays and whatnot. Now it's interesting because that can lead to good results for him, but can sometimes gum up the rest of the works on the offense and, you know, help their shooters to not get more involved. So I guess I'm not overly worried about DeRozan going into this game, but again, if that field goal percentage really starts to slip, that could be a sign that he's forcing things, and it's not necessarily where you want to be because, well, yeah, more shots is generally better. More forced shots, more bad shots doesn't really get you there. So
I think if you're Toronto, you're really worried. It's one thing to lose a game one against, you know, in a certain situation, you know, like let's say Pacers like snuck out a win against the Cavs in game one, they'd be concerned, but I think the feeling would still be like, look, we're going to take this. I think if you're Toronto, you're really worried about that first game result and just sort of how the game played out, because it was just probably the exact matchup they just didn't want to grab in the first round, and they got it, and then they got blown out. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that makes – I don't know if that, like – I don't know that what that does to teams mentally to just maybe be worried. Maybe Toronto is just good enough, but I would be if I'm them, I'm pretty concerned with that first
game. Doesn't feel good to lose in game one, and they've had a checkered playoff past with this roster, so yeah, they can't be feeling great.
Speaking of teams maybe not feeling so great, Boston goes to game two against Chicago, who was able to win the first game in Boston as well. This is a good example. I wrote about this in the picks for last night. This is a good example of you can have a worse team, but when you have the best player on the court for a team, then that does, in the playoffs, I think that matters. That seems like a, sort of like a Bill Simmons-y kind of like
that was
throwaway.
Big time. Yeah, I was debating whether I should make fun of you for that.
No. I get that it sounds like it sounds like hyperbole, but Butler is just really good, and he was really good in game one. And, you know, Boston's best players didn't even play that poorly, and Chicago still won. I still think Boston wins the series, so I don't think there's really a concern there. But, Butler is just the best player in this series, and he showed it, and they're going to play him huge minutes. How much do you like him going into this matchup, like, for sort of cash game purposes? He's the second most expensive guy in the slate.
Yeah, a lot to unpack here. So, I think, first of all, Butler, you know, what he's showing us right now is that he has a very, very good floor. You know, he's going to go out there. He's going to be a huge part of the plan. He's probably going to get 45 fantasy points almost in his sleep. And on a short slate, that's often good enough, except for when it's not good enough. And I'm just not sure yet. Like, we've talked with our chatters a lot recently. We've been in the, you know, been in the articles saying this as well. And you just don't need to get the most expensive guy on a slate on a three-game slate. Like, I think people have really fallen out of the habit of playing these shorter slates, or since they don't play them as frequently during the regular season, they're very used to, well, Russell Westbrook's on the slate, he'll be in my cash game lineups. And the playoffs don't really work that way. And in addition, you get fewer punts in addition to there being fewer games in general. So, yeah, it's a pretty tricky situation. So I'm not sure if actually we're going to land on Butler for our cash game purposes tonight. But I am pretty interested in some of these other pieces. So one of the guys that we kind of looked at and then steered away from was Robin Lopez. Now, he went out there, and mostly because we just weren't sure, you know, was he going to be, he was playing fewer minutes at the end of the season, and we just weren't sure what his role is going to be. He goes out there and gets 14 points and 10 rebounds, and he's still fairly priced on FanDuel. What's your thought on him?
Yeah, my only thought is that we've seen this with the Bulls before, in that they just don't, even in the playoffs, I simply don't trust Fred Hoiberg's like decision making process to like stay consistent, and I don't know if there's always a rhyme or reason to it, like on a game to game basis. Good examples being like Mirotić starts and plays 19 minutes, and this is the game where Portis plays more. Do you know what I mean? Like Rondo
well,
goes
out power forward position for sure, but Lopez has gotten the minutes. Like, I mean, I know it was a little dicey at the end of the regular season, but he was really getting minutes there for very long stretches this season.
I definitely tick this minutes up, and I know like we've been pretty consistent about like what you do in game one. That's sort of where we put your minutes around for game two, because it is the best comp we're probably going to get for what a team's plan is. And I basically did that with Lopez, but I did not take it to 34 simply because I just don't. The Bulls have been one of these teams during the season, like I said, that just they just play willy nilly. Now Rondo only played 27 minutes. Some of that was foul trouble, but just as comps, these guys don't tend to, except for Butler and pretty much Wade, these guys just don't play consistent minutes, because I think Fred Hoiberg is kind of just clueless, to be honest, from a coaching.
He doesn't have a steady hand necessarily. Yeah, I think it's fair. I think maybe the right number is more like 32, but I hear what you're saying. I think it's interesting, you know, you pointed out why, like, having the best player in the series and the difference that could have made. I think it's also that teams like the Bulls, and, you know, we saw this with the Heat when they had LeBron and Wade and, you know, kind of the big three. obviously Butler, Wade, Rondo at this point in their careers or nothing like that, but what we are seeing here is what their upside is. You know, they're very dysfunctional during the season. They lost tons of games just because randomly Rondo wasn't allowed to play or Wade was hurt or whatever was going on. It was just one of these true zoo insane situations. But they just do have some real players. Like if Wade has actually just been kind of resting on his laurels during the season and kind of nursing these injuries and can give us one series, like if they're looking at this as their championship, you know, with some bad blood maybe between Rondo and the Celtics at the end there, like I could see them giving them a fight. And I think what we're more looking at here, and it's this way in the Toronto-Milwaukee series too, is we're probably just checking this off our list of series where we're concerned about blowouts. I think that's really the big daily fantasy takeaway, because it wasn't clear going into this series if we were just going to see either of those teams get boat raced. And now that we're not, I think we can feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, I think Butler actually helps. Just the fact that he's going to be on the court for so much just helps. He'll help the games at least stay close, it seems like. Just because, again, he's so good. I like Wade. Wade's a great value on the slate and shooting guard. Shooting guard's kind of tough. Look, the shooting guard was an absolute epic disaster yesterday in the two-game slate. Like, if you're looking, staring at that names like J.R. Smith and Wayne Seldon, like Danny Green, and there really wasn't like any other choices beyond those three guys. Right. But that's not the case here tonight. I think Wade at 6,600, you're going to probably see 34 to 35 minutes out of him. Hopefully they stagger his rotation just so he can get a little bit more scoring, especially just on the minutes where Butler is off the court, which isn't going to be many. But for 6,600, you're getting a really solid value on him. And I can see already in the system that you ticked Robin Lopez's minutes up. So good job, buddy. On the Celtics side of the ball, obviously Isaiah Thomas is going to play in the game. There was some speculation about, you know, the tragedy that happened with his sister, whether or not he was going to have to go and sort of be with family during this time. He is going to play. He played pretty well in the first game. From a shooting perspective, he, you know, 10 for 18, actually, he played very well, 10 for 18, and it got to the line 12 times. Still wasn't enough for them to win, mostly because they really just couldn't get scoring from anywhere else. How big of a concern do you think is that? Do you think you see more shots from guys like Bradley in this game? Horford played a ton of minutes too, so what are your thoughts on the Celtics?
Yeah, so I think I'm going to start with Horford, actually. The 40 minutes there, I think, are very telling. I think a lot of people were wondering what the Celtics were going to try to do here. Were they just going to try and kind of go big and win the game on the glass? Because, you know, after Chicago traded away Taj Gibson, they've really given up a lot in the rebounding department. And the 40 minutes from Horford, I think, tells us two pieces of information. First of all, he never played anywhere near those minutes during the regular season, and that's an advantage that Boston appears to try to be pressing. And I think that also, the reason I tick Lopez's minutes up a little bit more is Chicago really has no one to answer Horford if Lopez isn't out there on the court. And Lopez actually did pretty well, you know, contested a lot of rebounds, out-rebounded Horford over the course of a 40-minute game. So that actually just makes me more bullish on Lopez in particular, if this is where the Celtics are going to, the basket they're going to try and put their eggs in here. So I like both Horford and Lopez for that reason. I think both of them are going to play more minutes than probably we predicted in the first place. After that, it's pretty much what we expected, right? Big minutes out of Thomas. Avery Bradley's been playing 36 minutes, you know, since I was a young child, it seems like. And Jay Crowder, you know, just barely tops 30 minutes and, you know, doesn't quite get there, but, you know, you could see him getting there if things got better from the field. So after that, there's really not much to talk about. Like, Celtics are one of these teams that's kind of been showing us their hand throughout the regular season.
Yeah, Horford is probably going to end up in cash games simply because if you think 39 to 40 minutes is going to be just what they're planning to do here, then you're getting fantastic value on his price because basically big men just don't play that many minutes really, and that's kind of the whole story for him. Love that value.
He's cheap, dude. Yeah, 7,100. I don't think you need 40 minutes out of him on 7,100 to get there. So yeah, good spot.
Celtics, I would say, not in a must-win situation here, but you can see them really, if anything, you're going to see even more minutes out of their big guys tonight because I think there's no possible way they want to go to Chicago down 0-2 to the Bulls.
You don't think so?
I'm just going on a limb, buddy. I don't think they want to. I think that's probably... Right. I think that's
probably... You know more about... You're like a body language doctor in our little group here, so if you say they don't want to go down 0-2, I believe you.
Their modus operandi for this game: do not lose the game. It's just saying
guys, we do not want to lose this one.
It feels like we don't want to lose it. Last game is the Clippers and the Jazz. Jazz dealt a pretty significant, not even pretty significant, a very, very significant blow in the first 10 seconds of the game in game one when Mabab Mute runs his knee into Gobert's knee and Gobert goes down. It's one of those like brutal things to see a guy who I mean, Gobert is like not a flopper. I mean, there's some guys that would probably like lay on and lay on the floor and milk it for a little bit of the injury and then kind of get off. When he's a guy like Gobert rolling around on the ground, you're kind of like, oh man, he's really, really hurt. And sure enough, he sprains his MCL in the first play of the game, leaves the court, and the Jazz still go out and beat the Clippers. Is it more of an indictment on the Clippers just not having kind of the firepower that you need at this point in the NBA season, or is it that the Jazz are just like a good team? And they'd be great if Gobert could have just stayed on the court.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the Jazz are a good team. There's no question about that. And I think it was also interesting to see the Jazz exploit a weakness of the Clippers that's been there forever and really attack that 3 and 4 position, particularly on the wing. You know, Hayward played a ton of minutes, got 18 shots in the air. Joe Johnson sprinkled in some at the four. He got 14 shots in the air, scored 21 points, including the game ender there. So it's and Favors played well, too. So I think the Clippers just have never filled that hole at small forward. They never, like, anyone basically who doesn't want to be covered by Blake or who can't be covered by Blake in the post and isn't a two guard, like, it's a black hole for them on defense. So yeah, I'm really, really interested to see what they do for this next couple games going forward, because I think Hayward and to a lesser extent Johnson could have something of a field day here.
Yeah, I'm not sure who they plan on starting this game, and if they have, I've just totally missed it. I suspect it's going to be Favors with Johnson coming off the bench. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. It seems crazy to me that they won this game without Gobert, considering the size that the Clippers have down low, and they were able to shoot really good from the field. And that, I just don't know if they're going to shoot. They're just not going to shoot 42% again from three for a game, I don't think. So I suspect if anything, you see kind of this game go more the Clippers' way. Do you think this is a game where they, maybe their original game plan probably wasn't to like completely attack the post and Gobert going down? I'm not sure if they pivoted quickly enough. Like, could you see a bigger game, let's say, out of like guys like DeAndre Jordan? Blake was great too. I mean, what do you think? The Jazz, a new starting lineup, a couple days to game plan for a new game, for a game without Gobert. Do you think you see like sort of a different Clippers result from their interior players?
There might be a different game plan, but I'm not exactly sure how they hope to execute on it. So take a guy like DeAndre Jordan. You know, yeah, he can be a powerful offensive force basically just on pick and rolls. Like, he's not someone who's really going to post people up and get his buckets that way. So unfortunately, he's kind of the exact wrong center. Like, even if he were like Dwight Howard, I think this would be a much, much different series. But he's kind of there for putbacks and lobs and that kind of thing. And sure, Gobert is better at defending those than whoever the replacement's going to be, for without a doubt. But it's not like Jordan's really not the guy who can take advantage of them on the offensive end, in my mind. But one thing that I think will continue to rear its head is a big rebounding advantage the Clippers' way. Getting like whoever they decide to put out there, whether it's Favors and they move DI to the five, or, you know, they just can't put Joe Johnson. I'd say it's almost definitely going to be Favors. They get pretty small, and, you know, Jeff Withey can maybe get some extra minutes here. He's not really anyone's going to be concerned about. They might just need him as a tall person to be out on the court, because he might be the only tall person they have. But yeah, it's a really, really tough spot. This was already kind of a weak point for them, and it only gets weaker. So yeah, I'm a little concerned. As for Blake, yeah, 43 minutes. It was clear that Doc felt like that was going to be the plan with Gobert, try to dump it into Blake and get him going. It didn't quite work out probably quite as well as they wanted to. Blake was 6 turnovers, only 9 from 21 for the field. So I don't know. If I were the Clippers, I'd be pretty unhappy with the result. But Gobert being out is just found money for them, and that might keep them a little looser than they would be otherwise, having lost a game one.
Yeah, I think they're still they're pretty significant favorites going to this game. They're favorites -9, which is the biggest spread on the slate. I do think that Vegas sees them. The Jazz got lucky in game one. I don't think there's any doubt about it, especially from how well they shot from the field. I think Chris Paul is probably, we played him in every lineup in the first go around, thinking he was just a fantastic value at his price. Nothing has changed for me there. He is pretty much a lock for me for cash games, even at 9,200. I think you see kind of more of the same from him. I know that the Jazz are not a good defensive matchup. They're worse without Gobert, and this is just the playoffs where you do have to throw some of the metrics out out the door, just because, I don't know, these games are just a little bit different. We saw Paul pushing the pace more in the first game. He was also just able to get more shots than he's typically used to doing. 19 shots from the field for him is a lot, and a good sign for them that he wants to take more of the offensive load. I love playing him again tonight. I probably go back down the Redick well. He was horrible in game one, but like, he just could not stop turning the ball over and really just couldn't find any shots on the perimeter. I do think you see more minutes out of him as well. So this is an interesting game. This is a fun three-game slate. Like, the playoff basketball, It's just different. It's more fun to watch, really.
Oh, of course, it's so much more intense. And well, and another one quick note about this game, before we kind of sign up, do a little sign off here, is that I think we have some reason for the Jazz to pick up the pace now too. Typically, teams that are smaller than the other teams don't like to slow things down, and the Jazz have been so big with Gobert and Favors or Gobert and Diao down low that it's always been on their side to kind of go a little slower. And I think that if Gobert is just going to be out for the foreseeable future, if they play Favors, if they run lineups with Favors and Joe Johnson, it just behooves them to try to get up and down the court a little bit more quickly. So yeah, we might want to tweak the pace numbers that are involved in setting these projections. And for those of you at home, like, just take a closer look at this one than maybe you would have otherwise, because yeah, I think there's going to wind up being slightly more value here than there would have been at the beginning of the series.
All right, that's it for us today. We will be back again on Thursday talking some more NBA playoff basketball from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, dfsr.com. For short, go over the /membership. They'll get you a free trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It will cover you for NBA for the rest of the playoffs and MLB as well. So think you'll be happy with the service. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. And if you are interested in DFS baseball, we are also recording our baseball pod right after this. So go find that on iTunes and subscribe. We'll be talking 3 to 4 days a week, just kind of DFS baseball strategy and just kind of stuff to look at for the day. So go check that out as well. Back again Thursday, buddy. Talk to you later.
Adios.